Picture this. You finished your first book and nailed it. The plot, the characters, all the twists and turns. This one's a winner, and all you need is the right cover. If you've got my art skills, this is the part where panic usually sets in. Enter the cover villain, hero to writers everywhere. Founded by noted author Remy Flagg, Cover Villain focuses on composite image covers for science fiction and fantasy writers. Give them the details, and they'll craft a cover using popular trends that everyone will want to see. But wait, you say, I've got ideas of my own. No problem, as Cover Villain loves a good collaboration. As they say, our goal is to put a little villain in every cover we make. Want to know more? Then head to covervillain.com and follow them on Facebook and Instagram.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Citywide Blackout, your home for music, movies, and more. I'm your host, Max Bowen. Well, it was a few months ago when I interviewed Tara Kelly to talk about her newest music video. This time, we cover a lot more ground as we talk about her decision to move to Los Angeles, what it's been like, and how her music has flourished. Over the last year, Tara's style has changed a lot. We look at the new directions she's gone in during the pandemic, when shows and touring came to a halt. We also talk about her personal style and how it's reflected in her music.
LA-based singer-songwriter Tara Kelly joins me again. Tara, welcome back. It's great to have you back here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very happy to be back.
All right. Now, folks, last time we had Tara on the show, we were talking strictly about the music video. This time, it's everything. We're going to be sharing the whole story, so kick back, relax. It's going to be a good one. I'll start by asking about your entry into music, because professionally speaking, you've only been doing your own thing for the past like a year and a half. When you started doing your own music, what did the pandemic do to kind of put the brakes on?
Oh my gosh. It was such a strange month when it happened. I look back now and I'm like, oh, I don't know even now how I survived getting from then to here. Because at the time, I had just started it was about 2 years ago. I just started getting in sessions for my own stuff. I had been writing for other people for many years. And I was like, I'm going to break out and want to be an artist of my own. So I started doing sessions for myself over that summer of 2019 and had all these songs ready to go. And I started playing a few preliminary shows in California, and everything was going super well. And I felt like I had all this momentum. And in fact, we had a huge Peppermint Club fundraiser booked the week that everybody got sent home. And I was set to co-headline that with a friend, and everything was ready and lined up. And then all of a sudden, pandemic hit. And I remember when it happened, my friend, not that we were, so incredibly naive. I just think at the time, nobody knew what was going on. And we were yeah, we'll definitely be able to still do that show, maybe just at less capacity, because they wanted us to bring upwards of 500 people. And it was a fundraiser, so we had more than that. And we were maybe 250, that they'll let that happen. Not realizing that you couldn't have two people in the same room. So yeah, it was definitely a shock. And the pandemic kind of pumped the brakes. But looking back now, I truly think it was such a positive thing. And I almost don't know that I would be as confident in the direction that my career is headed without it. Because I was playing all these shows and taking all these sessions, it really forced me to legitimately stop and take a look and take inventory and stock of what I was doing and be wow, okay, what do I really want to say? And what do I really want to, do visually? And how do I really want to package myself as an artist instead of just doing it for the sake of time? So I think it was in that way. And I got to write so much more and with different people that I met, as things started to open up again. So, and on Zoom sessions. So I think it was definitely a blessing in disguise at the end of it all.
So having that extra time to consider your career and where you wanted to go, did you find yourself rethinking yourself or maybe saying, okay, I'm not this, I'm this?
I'm so glad you asked that, because the answer to that question is yes. And it almost scares me to admit it as an artist, because one of the things that I love talking about is and telling other people in any business, like having a clear vision is so important, and knowing who you are and don't let other people tell you who you are. I really think that that's valuable advice in a lot of respects, because you can get very pigeonholed in this industry really quickly. However, I'm glad that I put out a song called Ghost Town right at the beginning of 2020. And that wasn't reflective of some of the other things I was writing necessarily, in that, you know, it was in a major key and it was this very like folk pop song. And I knew that some of the other stuff I was working on and wanted to continue to work on probably felt a little folkier and a little bit more in like the Americana realm than Ghost Town necessarily. So I think it was good for me to have put that song out, played a few shows with the other stuff, so some people knew what I was really trying to do. But then to get the feedback online was really helpful. Like, not that, you know, anybody had any negative feedback. It was just genuine feedback of like, hey, you know, this is a pretty poppy song. And, you know, the stuff that you play in your videos or on your Instagram sounds a little darker and more mysterious and cool. And like, I knew that's what I wanted to go for. Like, even the stuff I'm working on now that I'm super excited about, I needed the pandemic to almost tell me like, okay, like, don't be afraid. Just because you're in LA, like, doesn't mean that you can't put a lot of banjo in your songs or harmonica or pedal steel guitar or mandolin. Like, I wanted to really highlight those instruments. And I think now I'm way less afraid to do that. And I say afraid because I think that sometimes we get feedback from people that says, you know, hey, you have to be a certain type of pop artist, or you have to be a certain type of country artist, or this is what indie folk is. And all of those things are very true. But LA loves labels and boxes and types, especially all across the entertainment industry. And I knew that, like, I had to find my type. And I think my type is a little bit darker and more intriguing and has some of those less commonly used instruments in Los Angeles. So I'm really excited to be working on newer stuff that includes that.
I kind of get that listening to some of your songs. I definitely get that the variety of sounds, the instrumentation. If this had not happened, do you see yourself in a much different spot in terms of how you sounded?
Ooh, I love the what if game. I mean, I think it's my favorite, truly. It's fun. Yeah, I almost think actually I could have gone poppier had the pandemic not happened. And I think that would have been for a couple of reasons, but one of them that comes to mind quickly is I was playing shows with a lot of other pop artists at the time, who kind of work in these, like, you know, hotel cafe or like house show vibe settings. And I'm really inspired by all of their music and I love it. And I think, you know, sometimes what you're listening to ends up being what you make. I love that about even listening to like Eric Clapton. And you can tell there were times where they were influenced by different people and bands over the years. So I think I probably could have gone a little poppier. And then during the pandemic is when I really like got to deep dive into some folk artists that I hadn't like really taken the trip down their lane and listened to full albums. And I went on a lot of long road trips where, you know, that was one of the best parts of the pandemic, in my opinion, was everybody had like a great playlist recommendation or great songs to get you through it. And I was like so happy to have that on. I did a lot of drives up the California coast on my own. And it was really nice to have some of those songs like sink in so that I could then take that material and be like, oh, okay, like this is actually really cool and probably what I want to sound like moving forward.
This may seem like a stupid question, but you don't really look like a pop artist. And I know that,
thank you.
And I know that, you know, artists, you cross genres all the time, but if I had to, but from what I'm seeing in your pictures and your videos, you look the part of a folk artist. But my question to you is, when it comes to crafting your identity, is what you wear like a big part of it?
Huge part of it. I'm glad that you said that. That's honestly a great compliment to me because I feel like I do spend a lot of time and try to put a lot of thought into just my visual aesthetic in general. And I think that, yeah, a pop artist, of course, among various genre bends, can look a bunch of different ways, but there is sort of like a quintessential look. And I mean, I moved to LA at a time where like I knew I didn't have that. Like I knew deep in my bones, I was like, I'm not a pop artist. And I had a lot of friends around me that were, and we were all playing shows together. And I was like, this is not me. Like I know that I fit a different vibe, kind of two different places in South New Jersey and Charleston, South Carolina, which are both, if you don't know, very flat areas. there's no mountains. Everything is pretty relaxed. So by the time I got to California and just let the like landscape sink over me with the mountains and the desert, when I first spent an extended period of time in Joshua Tree, I was like, whoa, this is my aesthetic. This is who I am. And I started spending more time there and getting to know people there, buying a lot of clothing and jewelry and pieces there. These are actually from there, these earrings. And yeah, I got super into turquoise and I let a lot of that wash over me. And I knew that like cosmic vibe that Joshua Tree tends to hold and some of the California national parks and desert in general was always going to be part of my aesthetic, and that what I wore in that, you know, sort of like very like folky, almost my roommate likes to say, I'm a fairy cowboy. She's like, she's like, you dress like a fairy, like very floaty, very pretty, but you know, can still wear it in the dirt and be a little rugged. And I also, someone once compared it to like Dolores from Westworld, and I was like, I take that as a huge compliment as well. So yeah, I like to incorporate all of that into my visual.
I think that Fairy Cowboy is, number one, a very accurate description actually, but would also make a great album title.
Ooh, you just got my wheels turning. Yeah, that could be a really cool album title. Oh man, all right. We're putting that one on the list. That's a good one. Thank you.
Speaking of wheels turning, given that everything came to a halt, just as you were just starting to get rolling with your own career, did you ever think, okay, maybe we should just give this up, put it aside, and kind of focus on the essential stuff?
It's a great question. Music is one of those things, and I hate to come off cheesy, but like I love it so much that it having a sort of like backup plan, if that makes any sense, or focusing on the essential things in my life, always came at like a, you know, 70-30 sort of like, meaning like music was going to always take up 70% of my life, and that, you know, other things of course would have to make their way in. But that I would try to keep music as my top priority, because when you love it that much and you know that, and this is going to sound like really morbid and I don't mean for it to, but when you know that when you're the one you're the only one that's on your deathbed and looking back at your life and like, did I do all the things that I wanted to do and the things that were going to make me happy? And I want to be able to look back and say, yeah, I may have sacrificed some other things, but I didn't sacrifice the one thing that meant the most to me and that helped me make other, especially like young people or young girls in particular, feel the way I felt when artists sang, and therefore their music helped me. So yeah, as morbid and strange as it sounds, I really didn't think about giving up ever. But I do think that there is, and the pandemic kind of pointed this out to all of us, there is a really healthy balance between having your career and doing what you love, and figuring out where to balance your family and your friends and, you know, other work you might want to do, other hobbies you might have. Being a human and just remembering to like breathe, be a human, like take a walk, go outside, like work out, do things that make you feel good. Or sometimes, you know, shut your phone off or go on a road trip, whatever it is. This business, as you know, can be all consuming, and finding a way to be a human amongst all of that is very, very important and hard to remember sometimes.
Definitely is. But was that hard to do, especially when last March, when everything was just stop, and the panic sets in because you realize this is not going to be over soon?
I mean, panic definitely set in. I think it was hard to do. I feel like at the time I was experiencing all of these loss emotions, you know, maintain the momentum I had in my career? And if I can't do that, you know, will I have to give it up? And I think I channeled that into just for the first few months, like trying to keep going. I was like, okay, well, I'm just going to do the things that I've had on my list forever that I need to do. And they're, you know, the music related things that I need to make sure I take care of as an independent artist. And I just powered through, and all my friends are like, it almost seems like the pandemic hasn't stopped you. Like, you're just going. And I was like, yeah. And it wasn't until I had a really crazy quarantine accident last May, it's almost been a year, where I dropped a glass on my foot and I had to get tendon surgery, that stopped me. Like, I didn't have a choice. Like, I had to stop working. And I think some people experience that at the beginning of the pandemic. Some people experience it later if, God forbid, they lost their job or something happened. But yeah, it was truly my forced stop, where like, you have to stop working. You can't walk. So you need to focus on literally the essentials, like walking to get some food with your crutches, because you only have, you know, you really don't have any hands, but if you work them right, you have one hand, and, you know, making sure you're recovering. And it was really a good time for me to pause. And actually, during that time is probably when I listened to the most new music and new artists and discovered people. And it was also right around when Black Lives Matter movement was like at its peak. And that allowed me to like really focus on that and make sure that, you know, I was acting as an ally and accomplice in those cases. So yeah, I feel like that forced stop was really necessary, I think, to like take a look and say, okay, what am I doing? Am I happy? Is everything okay? How do I want to move forward? And I think we kind of all maybe needed that in one way or another.
Any artists in particular that you kind of discovered during those downtimes that have stuck with you?
Okay, I'm going to make a really embarrassing admission here first on CityWide Blackout. I can't believe I'm saying this, but like during that time, because of a couple of different friends, and when for me it happens in threes, that means I have to check them out. Like if somebody says, whether it's a book or music or a podcast, they're like, three people say it, now I have to do it. I rediscovered, and by that I mean actually discovered, John Mayer, which is so crazy because like I feel like every musician, he is such the like musician's musician. Like everybody is, you know, in awe of him and his guitar playing. And I think I had kind of written him off years ago due to some of his personal stuff and in the media. And I so wish I hadn't, because I realized that I had like never actually listened to most of Continuum. Like I'd never heard Slow Dancing in a Burning Room or Stop This Train or, you know, some of his later work as well, and Everything I'm Born and Raised. And I mean, I was just so like, it came to me slowly, but I was slowly like taken aback by my lack of involvement for the last 15 years. And I was like, how have I missed this? And, you know, why was I only a fan of him when he was on the radio? And I'm so glad I did. And now all I do, honestly, I have way cooler artists than that, but I just wanted to give you my embarrassing admission. All I do now is I watch John Mayer videos. Like when I have like a snippet of time, if I'm like, okay, I got to eat this real quick and then go to a meeting or whatever, I'll just turn on an interview and just watch him on podcasts and stuff. Yeah, I'm the biggest fan now. Like I'm way in deep. It's very embarrassing.
I guess as long as you're into him now, that's what counts.
Mm-hmm. I'm literally late on the train, no pun intended, but I'm here, and better late than never. And yeah, now I'm in. I've like watched all his like Berklee College of Music series, and yeah, I'm deep. I went as far as you could go.
Does hearing these new artists, in particular, John Mayer, does like discovering all this new music, does it give you ideas for some new things to try out?
It totally does. He in particular was a great one for me to discover as a guitar player. And obviously I will, or no one else will be anywhere near his level, probably for a long time, but no, I'm sure there's amazing guitarists out there. I know a few of them, but yeah, he gave me some great ammo, I think, as a guitar player, just more in my arsenal. He's a fan of alternate tunings every now and again. And he also tends to stay in the middle of the neck. And I don't think I ever really explored that as much as like a beginner guitar player throughout most of my life. So I was like, I'm gonna try to, you know, experiment a little bit more and, you know, make sure I'm getting my blues scales in and things like that to try to, especially, I mean, my writing, not only for myself, but for other artists as well. I want to make sure I'm, you know, inventive with my sort of like arsenal of tools I have at my disposal when writing something to really offer the best sound. And he also does some really, most people love him obviously as his ability to solo on an electric guitar is unbelievable, but I love his ability with an acoustic guitar. And he always talks about how a song is only good if you can play it on an acoustic guitar and it still works. And so I try to, you know, really take that to heart in everything I do. And yeah, there was this other band I discovered during the pandemic called the Dead Tongues. They're a folk band and they use a lot of harmonica, like in almost every song, there's like a decent harmonica solo. And I really actually like their use of, you know, bending and like minor harmonica sounds. That's me playing the harmonica. I think that they're super cool and really innovative. And that really inspired some of the newer stuff I'm working on now. And yeah, trying to use that instrument, you know, in a really folky and interesting way, and also, you know, changing its production style as well to give it a little bit more oomph and kind of change how it sounds, essentially, to almost make it have a like more like a pedal steel guitar kind of sound. That's been really fun. So it's absolutely inspired what I'm working on now.
Very cool. Very cool. So yeah. It almost sounds like this has been really a boost for you professionally and personally, just kind of having this year to focus on development.
It really has. I mean, I think in a weird way, and I know I keep saying this, but it was perfectly timed because I felt developed when I was at the beginning of 2020, but I don't know that I really was. So the development stage of everything was extremely helpful. And now I know we're all anxious for live music to come back in one form or another. I know you and I were talking before we got on air about how much it's still weird to not want to leave our house and all the mixed emotions that come with this closing, so to speak, to the pandemic. But truly, I mean, there's nothing I've missed more than playing out. And now that I'm, you know, starting to get on rosters and book shows again for the fall, I feel so much more, I'm still so nervous. I feel so much more confident, but I'm also so nervous. I'm like, oh my God, I haven't played a show in a year and a half, truly, like other than virtually. I'm kind of freaking out, but everybody will be in that boat. So it makes me feel a bit better. And yeah, I don't know that without the development focus time that I had, I honestly would have even been able to book some of these shows with, you know, the music I have out now and where I am as an artist. So I'm, yeah, in a weird way, glad it all worked out the way it did.
Yeah, I think it's really telling too that some folks, they use the time wisely. You know, they didn't just sit down and kind of complain about what they didn't have. They said, okay, this is what we got. Mm-hmm. Gonna make the most of it and see what we can do. And I've seen some folks, they put out entire albums about this year. Not just COVID though, but also the politics, the social change. Mm-hmm. I've seen people start entire really popular web shows because they couldn't do what they normally do. So it's been kind of interesting to see how some folks dealt with this abundance of free time now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I even saw on that same note, which is amazing. I'm so happy people are like expressing through art how this year went for them. On the same note, I even saw friends of mine who were in a similar boat that I was, you know, kind of just getting started and sort of starting to play out and develop their careers, that because of all the time everybody else was spending at home as well, who are lovers of music, discovered a lot of new artists that may not have been discovered as quickly if it wasn't for all of the time we were now spending on our phones. I have a couple of friends, actually, one band, Fly By Midnight, I mean, they got huge just during quarantine alone, which is amazing. And now, you know, they're on tour with Jake Miller, and yeah, just from people spending more time and engaging and being there for each other online, I think has really helped a lot of people's careers, which is cool to see. It is very sad for the touring industry though. I do feel bad talking about all the positives, because yeah, I know it's been really hard on a lot of people, and it's something to consider.
But I also think it's also important to focus on the positives. I mean, yes, this has been a tough year. There's some folks who have had their personal economy just ravaged, and I am very sorry for that. But at the same time, it's like there's been a lot of growth. There's been a lot of new stuff coming out. And I think it's worth counting the positives and also marking the negatives.
Absolutely. I completely agree. You're right. And thank you for reminding me of that. Yeah, I think a lot of this year was just counting your blessings where you could. And then, yeah, acknowledge, like you said, marking the negatives, acknowledging them, making sure, you know, we were doing what we could to validate people's human experience and try to come up with solutions. Yeah, it was a combination of both of those things, but focus on the positive is good. I think there's some good that came of this, definitely for me. So I'm very grateful.
Yeah, definitely. Now, you talked about having shows in the fall, and I'm very happy to hear that. I'm very happy to see bands booking tours now. I see venues announcing that they're working on their fall lineups. I know Broadway is coming back in a big way, too. Mm-hmm. We talked about the sort of like ring rust, you know, the concern about, can I get back into this? How are you getting yourself prepped?
Oh, another great question. I will be very honest. As much as I feel like I am doing things to get myself prepped, which I'll talk about, I'm still so nervous. I'm like, oh my, because you don't really know until you're there and you're in front of the people and you're like, but at the same time, that's what I've always loved about the stage. Once you're on it and the people are in front of you, it's the happiest place you've ever been, despite how nervous you are or the anxiety that can come with it or something that might go wrong. Usually things go right. And it's usually a very positive experience and people have like an interaction with you that's difficult to have in other areas of life. Like it's a really symbiotic relationship. So I am excited for that. But I, you know, yeah, want to acknowledge that I think a lot of us right now are like, oh my God, like we have to get on stage. But yeah, I've been fortunate enough. I think last time I talked to you, I mentioned I shot my last music video at a house in Venice where there was a lot of people kind of co-quarantining together. And I feel fortunate to have a pretty wide community in Venice where we, you know, have been able to start seeing each other again. We have like Google forms as to everybody's, you know, vaccination status and things like that. So people are starting to get together. And I have played a couple of shows for my friends on their rooftops and then also like a few house shows as well. And in backyards, which has been really nice. Like that keeps my like rhythm going and allows me to get my feet wet enough to feel good about it. But yeah, I think the first show will actually be the most telling. And I've just kind of considered it a wash. I'm like, you know what? If the first one goes bad, I will forgive myself. It's bad, you know, by my standards. I'll be like, it's okay. It was the first one. And then I think it's in your blood in a lot of ways. Like, I think it just comes back to you. So hopefully the post-COVID nerves will wear off and then we'll be up and running after that.
Well, plus I think people will be so grateful to have live music back. They're not going to complain. No one's going to say, oh, that song, you messed up like those words. No one's going to give you any grief about that. It's total blank check.
That's so true. And I'm really hoping that continues. But yeah, I think genuinely, I mean, so many people in my life who are either affiliated with the music industry or not, and mostly the people who aren't, are desperate for live music. Like I'm in this very large group chat right now that almost every day it's a new person being like, this DJ or this person, like they have a show in November and then this one's in January. Everyone's so excited to have live music back. So yeah, you're right. I think they'll just be happy we're there. They won't complain too much.
Because I've talked about this before, and I think it's pretty worth noting. We came so close to losing it all. I think we take that kind of stuff for granted. You know, like you talk about how like local artists mm-hmm. have such a hard time drawing a crowd. People don't want to go out. Now we've all seen, hey guys, we almost lost all of it for good.
I think that's a really, really good thing to point out. Yeah, it was interesting right prior to COVID. I remember having that same sentiment, especially playing a lot of smaller venues and house shows. People had so many options. and, you know, option is the death of choice. And I think that now we're in a really fortunate position that, like, yeah, people are not taking it for granted as much anymore. And even if we have, you know, multiple options, like, do I go see a movie or do I go to a live show? Two things that I probably haven't really done during the pandemic. You know, I think both of them, and rightfully so, I think we'll get more credit that they genuinely do deserve, and more people will show up, because you're right. Like, we did almost lose it completely, which is terrifying to think about, but true.
Exactly. You talked earlier about doing a couple rooftop shows. How did it feel to get back into that atmosphere of playing before an actual audience that were physically in front of you?
It felt really good. Really, really good. I remember the first one was last fall. We were kind of like all still probably precariously getting together. And it was like a small group of us. And there were a few of us who were musicians, and they were like, let's just all go up on the rooftop and sing a little bit. And I mean, I remember being really nervous, really, really nervous. And these were my friends and people who had seen me play a million times. But yeah, they were also all really supportive, and it just felt really good to get back up and kind of like get to do things with your friends that sometimes you don't get to do during shows. Although I wish we did more of it, like, you know, freestyling, or somebody gets up and raps a song and then someone else can, you know, sing the chorus and we're all doing it together. Yeah, I love that kind of like guitar circle vibe. I'm a big harmonizer as well. So if anybody's singing the melody and I can hop on, they're like, ooh, oh, okay, all right, we're doing it. And it's the most fun.
There's this venue near my place that will often book like singer-songwriters. And usually at the end of the show, they'll all get up on stage together and they'll all like play a song together. I love that whole atmosphere of just like creative energies interacting.
That's so cool. Oh my gosh, I love that. Yeah, I think we should do more of that, especially because, I mean, when you get a group of singers together, forget it. Like, they sound amazing, and it's like getting theater kids together. Like, you all just want to get in and sing the song and enjoy it. And yeah, getting, like you said, that creative energy into one space is really powerful. And I don't remember if we talked about this last time, but I have never been sort of one for competitiveness in the entertainment industry. I feel like in general, it's not helpful, and it actually doesn't really mean anything, because when decisions are made about you as an artist, whether it's, you know, something that, you know, will affect your career made by, you know, someone who works at a label or a radio station or, you know, Spotify, et cetera, like, those decisions can be extremely arbitrary and usually have nothing to do with you. Sometimes it'll be the sandwich the person ate for lunch that day, and now they're in a bad mood. Like, I always tell people that all the time. I'm like, you don't want to quit or give up in this industry, because, you know, you never really know when it's your time and when it makes sense for you. But yeah, so then when you have competition amongst each other, like, oh, you know, that person got the playlist spot that I really wanted. Or if you're an actor, you're like, that person booked the part that I was really hoping to book. Like, at the end of the day, that doesn't mean that there's not another spot or another part out there for you. And when your friends are successful and your peers are successful around you, doing it together and helping each other and collaborating. So yeah, I think that it's a very like tide raises all ships kind of mentality in my books. We might as well do more creative things together.
I like this attitude of like non-competitiveness when you're in a very competitive industry. So that being said, what pushes you?
That's a good question. I think I push me, definitely. But I think what pushes me is, this is going to sound really cheesy, but I think that the music itself sort of needing to get out of me and my version of that music needing to be in the world is what pushes me, because you can't be anyone else but yourself, truly, as corny as that sounds. And in order for you to put your art into the world, it needs to come from the uniqueness that is you, or it's going to be inauthentic. And I think truthfully, like, as you mentioned, it's an extremely competitive industry. And there's a lot of reason for that. you know, it's true what they say that you have to want it in order to be able to do it. But I think that that wanting it and that burning desire to put your art into the world and help other people through your art, that has to be what drives you and pushes you. Because if it's just to, you know, beat the next guy onto, you know, a playlist or onto a tour or whatever it is, those goals are genuinely not sustainable. Like, that will never be enough for you if you're just trying to, you know, get to the next best thing. But if what pushes you is just having it there for the world to consume in a way that hopefully allows enough people to see what it is you're trying to do, meaning like you have to take it seriously enough and want it enough to be able to allow it to breathe in its place in the world. But I think because of that, there will always be people who will find you and resonate with your art and want to get behind what you're doing.
I think it's really good what you said earlier about not giving up just because you don't get that part or that spot on the playlist or booked that show. Because I think it's important for artists in general to remember that taste can be so subjective. You could ask 10 people who work in the industry, what's the best pop artist? And you're going to get 10 different answers.
100%. Absolutely. I love that. No, I couldn't have said that better myself. And it's true. Taste is so subjective. And that's what I love about music in general is that, and the way that the industry has evolved over the last 10, 15 years, we've allowed people to access such a wide variety of niches and genres. And so much has blended because we do have the ability to sort of like self-curate as lovers and consumers of music. We have the ability to say, yes, I like something and no, I don't like something else. And that doesn't mean that your no, I don't like something else artist isn't still successful. Like if you are like, you know what, I'm just really not an EDM person. Trust me, EDM is going to be fine without you. Like there's plenty of people who love EDM and will, you know, let that genre live. You can be whatever you want to be, truly, because there's enough access to music now, like I said, and enough self-curation that almost in a sad way, you know, you'll never have enough lifetimes to discover all the music that's out there. But also that, yeah, you can have like preferential tastes and subjective tastes in music and still allow your best friend to have completely different taste, and those genres still survive in the industry. So I think that's a really cool aspect of all of this.
If you do find yourself hitting a wall where you don't get booked to that show, or you don't get on that playlist, just say, you know what? I'll find someone else who does like me. Just got to keep on moving, because eventually you will find your spot. It might take a while. You might even have to relocate. But eventually that spot will find you.
I disagree with you. I said, I believe that. I agree 100%.
Yeah. You originally started out in Southern New Jersey, and now you're living in L.A. What was it that kind of led to this move, especially entirely cross country?
I moved to LA because a friend of mine had moved to LA just prior to me. And I credit him with changing my life in a number of ways. So we were kids in New Jersey. We didn't know each other. And we both auditioned for the same, we were both auditioning for like Broadway and writing songs and, you know, trying to be little singers when we were young. And we both auditioned for the same short film that included a singing role. And we met each other when we were like 12, and he told me, hey, like, I'm going to move to LA and I'm going to songwrite. And, you know, that's my plan. And I was like, wow, like, that's a really big deal. In my mind, I was always going to New York. I had never really heard much about Hollywood. I just thought of it as this like lofty thing that I don't even think at 12 years old, I had a concept of like what the other side of the country was. I had never visited there. I'd only been up and down the East Coast. And I was like, LA, oh my gosh, that's crazy. And so I started researching it on my own, and I had a manager in Philadelphia, when I was little, but like, there were so many more people in LA that I could now contact on the internet. So I started doing that on my own, and eventually had to tell my parents because they had to, you know, I was a minor, so they had to help me, you know, drive me places. If there was someone that had a New York office who was also in LA, and I was trying to, you know, figure out what I was going to do. And as time went on, this friend of mine, his name is Tyler Shammy, he moved to Los Angeles and was really thriving here as a 14-year-old. And I was like, oh my God, like, I need to move. So I was in high school and I just begged my parents. I was like, please, like, I really want to go to LA. And they're like, no, you have to finish high school. And I was like, I will finish high school, but like, I just want to move to LA, like Tyler, and do what he's doing. And they were like, no, like, you know, you got to go to college. Like, maybe you can look at some colleges there. It's like, okay. So one year, my junior year of high school, we went out to look at colleges. But I was going to visit Tyler and kind of, I wanted to look at the colleges too, but I was like, I really want to see what he's doing and hear about what he's up to. And him and his mom kind of gave us the rundown on the industry. And I took that all in and I made a little presentation to my parents. I was like, please, like, let me go. Like, I really just want to move to LA. And they were like, okay, but you have to promise us you'll finish high school. You have to promise us you'll go to college. Okay, I promise. And at 17 was in LA by myself, figuring it all out. So yeah, it was a crazy thing. I mean, I'm so incredibly, incredibly grateful that I did it. It forced me to grow up really fast. And I know that a lot of people say that about the entertainment industry, but for me, it was more like simple things about growing up really fast, like getting my own bank account and working and doing my own laundry and things that I hadn't thought about before, that a lot of kids experienced their first year of college. So I kind of got to do that a little early. And I was sort of like the mom of all the like kids at the time. Like if I was 17, everybody else was between 15 and 18. And they were in boy bands and they were pop artists and we were all in different writing rooms and we were all just trying to like figure it out and be kids and, you know, play shows and also like, you know, get Taco Bell in the middle of the night because there's nothing else to do and couldn't go anywhere. So yeah, it was a crazy time, but I'm very, very grateful that I did it. It certainly shaped me.
That sounds like a really fun adventure, actually. You know, you hanging out with all other like young artists, you know, doing your thing, finding your ways. And I could definitely see you as being like the mom of the group, kind of being like the guider for all these like young, like rambunctious artists.
Definitely.
But did you ever consider going back home?
Much to the dismay of my grandparents, I did not. They were like, oh, when are you coming back? Like, can't you do this in New York? I'd be like, you know what? I think that I've already done New Jersey. Like, I lived there for 17 years. I've experienced it. I think I did it. And if I live somewhere else, which to be very honest, I don't necessarily see myself living anywhere else other than possibly Nashville. But that's a whole other thing. But yeah, I told my grandparents, I was like, maybe New Zealand. Like, I don't know where I'm going to live. And that would make them really upset because they were like, we miss you. We're going to come home. But they've given up now, I think, for the most part. They're pretty supportive. And I'm lucky that my immediate family, when my brothers graduated college, decided to come to LA as well, because they were tired of the winter too. So I feel very like rooted here now, which is nice.
What was the hardest part being a young artist in LA when it came to just making your presence?
I would say the hardest part for me was doing, I think, a little bit of what we talked about earlier, which, and I think I was too young at the time to really understand it. But it was trying to find myself as an artist. Like, I was writing in rooms for other people, sometimes for myself. We were doing a lot of songs for pitch for big artists at the time. And I didn't know enough about who I was and how I wanted to sound and who I wanted to be to really be able to like confidently tell someone yes or no, or, you know, entertain certain offers. Like, I was told so many times by various, you know, co-writers and managers, they were like, you're the next Katy Perry. And I was like, really? Cause I don't see myself that way at all. And it's not the kind of music I'm making, or that I'm passionate about making. So I'm just confused, but I was so young and I think afraid of rocking the boat and damaging relationships that I was like, sure, I can be the next Katy Perry. Like, what are we writing today? And, you know, we would write songs that sounded like Teenage Dream. And I remember not feeling connected to it, but feeling like, okay, well, if this is, you know, the music that's really, oh my God, in 2011, everybody and their mother was like, let's make a dubstep song, but like pop it, because Taylor Swift did it one time. It was whatever was hot in the moment. And I just genuinely think I was young enough and I didn't have the confidence to be able to say in the beginning of a session, like, hey, you know what? I don't know if I really like that. Why don't we try something different? Or I love this direction, but maybe we should try it in a different key with a different instrument. Like, I didn't know how to make alternate suggestions. And I think it took me several years to gain that autonomy. And now it's the number one piece of advice I give to people all the time, especially young songwriters. I'm like, the biggest thing you can do as a collaborator genuinely is to stay true to yourself and not be a people pleaser at every turn. Not that there's anything wrong with, you know, hearing somebody's ideas out or seeing where something could go, or, you know, sometimes you don't like something and then somebody in the room will be like, well, maybe if we did it this way, and then now all of a sudden you see it in a different light. Like, there's, you know, positive aspects to changing things around, but I think that overall you really do need to stay true to your vision where you can, because otherwise, you know, everybody's just trying to do their best work. Like, if you say, hey, yeah, I like that, then they're just going to think you like it and they'll keep going down that road. And that might not necessarily be the case. So standing up for yourself in a like very like polite and collaborative and helpful way, and, you know, being firm where you have to, if the situation calls for it, in a professional manner, I think is super, super important and totally okay to do. And I think in particular, women don't do this. It's much, and, you know, not to say that men don't have the same problem, but it's much easier to apologize and say that, you know, oh, I, you know, of course I was in the wrong, even to another woman, just because you feel like, you know, maybe my opinion doesn't matter. I was overthinking this. And the reality is that your opinion does matter, and who you are as an artist matters a lot.
Exactly. Because I think there's always that rush to be the next so-and-so, because that person's famous, that person makes a fortune, and we all want that, and that's fine. Yeah. But you can't lose yourself in the process. And I think it's personally for me, I'm not a musician, so I probably have no clue what I'm talking about, but I think it's about finding that line where you achieve your goals, but you don't lose a sense of who you are as a person.
There's so many people lined up waiting to tell you who you are, and not always in a super malicious way. It's like you said, like, they're just looking at industry trends and what's working. And they're like, hey, like, you could be this, or if we, you know, did this certain thing to your music, whether it's, you know, changing the instrumentation or the arrangements, or, you know, changing your image, this is who you could be. And if you don't have the image going in, it's super easy to get caught up in what people are telling you your image is. And even if you do have the image going in, sometimes the image you have in your mind is based off of a trend that might have worked, you know, 10 years ago. That's not to say that you can't do it now. It's just that you're going to get a lot more pushback from people. So you have to be really steadfast, really strong in what you believe. And then now, I mean, I honestly think it's easier, as we were mentioning before, for artists to maintain autonomy over their vision, because there is so much like widespread genre bending. I think that, you know, to be a rock artist or to be a folk artist or to be a pop artist doesn't look like what it used to look like anymore. It could look like a number of things. And so I think that's given a lot of people permission, even like, you know, I'll mention it, Lil Nas X being able to be an incredible pop rap artist, you know, as a gay man. Like, it didn't used to look that way. And it's so cool now that it can look that way, and that he can now represent that for future artists who may not want to do exactly what he's doing, but want to do something like along the path. He's paving the way for that, which is really, really cool.
Does that ever enter into your mindset when it comes to your career? Do you want to be a paver of ways, or do you just want to do your own thing?
It does enter my mind quite a bit, in that I would like to be a paver of ways in my genre, especially when it comes to the longevity of my career. Like, I'm not a teenager anymore, and I'm not in, you know, I was never going to be the pop artist that they necessarily wanted me to be. But I think because of that, I now have something to say, and I have life experience that I wouldn't have otherwise had if I had been, you know, pushed through the funnel of like Disney stardom at 17. So I'm grateful for that in a lot of ways, because I think it's shaped me into a better artist. And I would still love to be able to have longevity in my career. That's not to say that there aren't incredible female artists and male artists for that matter who have been paving the way before me for that. But I think women in particular are underrepresented there. So I think it's, you know, it's so much easier to see like I hate to stereotype it this way, but like, you know, a guy with a raspy voice in his late 30s or early 40s, like he's, you know, singing with his guitar, and it makes sense still for people. And it's harder for that to make sense for people, for women. And I would love to be able to do this for several more decades. So, yeah, I hope to be a paver of ways in that sense, that like, you can still maintain longevity without, you know, beginning in your sort of like prime pop star years.
All right. I'm going to change gears here. When we had last had you on the show, you had recently released The River, and now you've got a brand new single out, Play With Fire, which you co-wrote with Billy Delia. How did the two of you meet, and what was it like working together?
Billy and I met at a show in Venice, actually. We met at what I recall was a cannabis and puppy adoption event, which is probably the most Venice thing you've ever heard. But yeah, there were like a bunch of models who were like modeling with the puppies to try to get them adopted. And then they were having this like little soiree afterward where there were these, you know, cannabis brands that were kind of, I think it had just become legal in the state of California, and they were trying to, you know, show off their brand. And I was there with a friend of mine who owned a cannabis brand, and his band, Grisfolk, was friends with the organizer of the event. So they were playing a show, a little like acoustic set. And I just remember being so blown away by the way they played live, and really excited to go meet them and talk to them. And I just went up to them after the show, and I was like, "Hey, like I thought you were great." And I told him a little bit about what I do, and he was like, "Yeah, you know, we should write together sometime." And then we both happened to be playing at Kaboo in San Diego at their festival in Del Mar, and they were playing on a really cool stage. And I, you know, ran into him afterward, and I was like, "Hey, like, we got to do that writing session." And he was like, "Yeah, for sure. Like, let's do it." So, a couple weeks later we met up, and, we wrote the song, and it took like 20 minutes. Like, it was one of the quickest writing sessions I've ever had. It was one of those sessions where we like flowed really perfectly together. Like, one of us would mention an idea, or a chord progression, and we were both pretty like, it was almost like improv. It was like, yes. And yes. And then, and we just like kept vibing off of each other and finishing the song. And we both knew, as most writers do when they go in, if you hate it, you can always change it later. But we ended up not changing anything. We were really happy with what we initially had lyrically, and we just added.
Who's on your list of artists to work with?
Oh, such a question. Oh my God. I mean, all right. In my dreams, like Stevie Nicks, Emmylou Harris, John Mayer, now that I'm his number one fan. Those are my like top like dream people that I would, you know, bend over backwards to work with. Dolly Parton. Right now there's an incredible folk artist. His name is Peter Bradley Adams. He's been really inspiring some of my new stuff, and he's got some incredible albums that have like shaped my interest in folk music. So I would love to work with him if the opportunity presented itself. And then Ian Fitchuk, who produced Casey Musgrave's latest album, and James Bay's Chaos in the Calm record. He's high on my list of producers, at least, to work with. And I just consider him like an all-around creative human being. He's amazing. But yeah, in my dreams, I think I'm on stage with Stevie. So
you always got to have dreams.
You do. It's very important. It's very important. Mm.
All right. Well, Tara, we are coming down to the final couple of questions. The big one that I think a lot of folks are wondering, what is next for you?
What is next? I am so, so, so excited about the new stuff I'm working on, and I can't wait to share it. I know I've mentioned it quite a bit throughout this interview, but yeah, it's so much more folky. We're in the, you know, banjo, mandolin land, and it makes me so happy. But it's got this like desert cosmic-y energy, a few like Eastern instruments on there and Indian instruments. So yeah, I am so unbelievably excited about the new stuff. And yeah, we've got quite the release schedule planned for 2021 and 2022. We're really getting back into it. And then yeah, I can't talk much about it, but I am very excited to tour a bit in the fall and get back to playing some shows. So I'm really excited to get back out there and see everyone again and just experience the joys of live music all together.
Exactly. And folks, we're almost there. The end is in sight, but you gotta, you know, keep safe.
Yes.
Get your shot. Stay safe. Keep wearing those masks. I know we all hate mm-hmm. them. I hate them too, but we're almost there, guys. We're almost there. Well, Tara, as always, great talking to you. But before we go, where do folks go to learn more about you and check your music?
Yes, you can find me on all of my social media pages. I am at Tara Kelly Music on almost everything. And I am youtube.com/Tara Kelly for YouTube. You can find my website. It's musictarakelly.com. I just flipped it. And yeah, please feel free to ask me any and all questions on social media, really active on Instagram and Twitter. I love answering questions about people's desire to become an independent artist or get into songwriting and or, you know, connecting and diving deeper. So feel free to reach out.
Great talking to you. I am loving the new song. And I'm sure we'll talk again very soon.
Yes, sounds good. Thank you so much for having me.
Hey guys, what's going on? This is Brian Murphy from One Time Mountain, and you're listening to Citywide Blackout with Max Bowen.
Rock on.
All right, folks, that brings this episode to a close. You can follow the show on Facebook under Citywide Blackout and Twitter and Instagram under Citywide Max. Listen to the show on Podbean, Spotify, Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, and every Saturday at 10 p.m. on Boston Free Radio. To close things out, enjoy Tara's new single, Play With Fire. As always, keep those ears open.
Dangerous game. Do you feel my pain? You don't know her name. If you could, would you change? Too close to the fame. Warn you not to stray.